The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.
With Ascot and Haydock to look forward to this weekend after, I have to say, another successful weekend's tipping on the Final Furlong Podcast last Thursday. It was winner after winner after winners. So Rory De Largy, bathing in gravy, I'm sure. Or maybe not.
Not healthy, is it? Not healthy bathing in gravy.
He used to wash in wine.
I draw a line at ass's milk.
He used to bathe in wine in France. So, who the hell knows? Who the hell knows? Speaking of France, we'll chat about that a little bit later on. As one of two Group 1 races takes place for the weekend there. First of all, we're looking at the 310 at Ascot. The Lavazza. So we're going for coffee, steaks, heritage handicap. The betting is currently headed by Warren for Sir Michael Stout and Ryan Moore, threes. Alpha Hell, Roger Varian. Rory has his face in his hands, sixes. Chalkstream, William Haggis, who's been banging in the winners, sixes. And Champagne Piaf, well, that'll do, for Gary Moore. See Gary Moore back in action, sevens. Rory, your thoughts on the 310?
I suspect that Warren will be the horse to beat here for Sir Michael Stout. It's a slightly disappointing renewal of this race, given we've always had double-figure fields for it in the past. Three-year-old handicaps, not always my idea of a good time, it has to be said. But most of these have had plenty of chances this season. And of course, some of them are winning as well. But the one who appears to be unexposed and progressive is Warren. He's only had the three tries in handicap. So he looked unlucky at the Ebor meeting last time out when he was beaten less than two lengths at the fifth behind migration. Ran out. He started slowly, which is normally a disaster at York. Came with a run in the straight and got stopped in his run twice under Kieran Schumark, and with Ryan Moore taking over again, I'm sure the public will pile into him. His arguably his best run came on good firm ground in his previous start at Newmarket, where he turned a weakly contested handicap into a procession, beating Mark Johnson's Big Kitten, Song Cran in Gloucestershire. That looks a half decent piece of form. He won by 5.5 lengths there, off a steady enough gallop, which is very impressive, given he wasn't setting that either. You're up £10 for it. That looks justified, and I suspect it's more to come from him. So, although there are nice horses in here, the likes of Chalkstream has gone up plenty in the handicap. State of Bliss similarly has been in pretty good form, but looks anchored off a mark of 92 now. Although probably not seen the best effect at York last time out, leading from a wide draw, but he was a bit disappointing there, having won under different tactics when Nicola Curry rode him at the Shergar Cup. That's probably a little bit flattering and hardest. Obviously he's back at over the same course and distance, so you can see him bouncing back, I suppose. But he's got a bit to prove after the way he checked out at York. He didn't go. I don't think he went hell for leather in the front end, so the fact that he dropped right out of that was a bit disappointing. So Warren looks the likeliest winner, but he's probably not a horse I'm going to back, because I don't think he'll be much of a price. You've got the prices in front of you there. You could surprise them.
Threes is the best.
Yeah. And threes is fair, I think. And there are plenty of horses with winning form and handicaps here, and horses who maybe eke out a little bit more improvement, but he's the obvious one to take a step forward, and very much caught behind his last two starts. So kind of hard to look beyond him, but I also find it hard to back some Michael Stout horses in handicaps, because it's very rare that you you get a bigger price than you should.
Very true. The possible exception being Royal Ascot, and even that these days isn't the way it used to be. I'm with you, by the way. I think, and I will back him. He'll be in my Lucky 63 for the weekend. I think he's going to take the world of beating. And yeah, he's is giving weight to some promising types like Chalkstream, for example, who you mentioned. But I think Chalkstream might have found his ceiling now. We'll see. Perhaps there is more to come from him. But for Warren, I think that that race is there for the taking. And if you want to add him into your multiple, or your multiple on Tote, or do the place pot, for example, then Warren is the one we're recommending. The 345 at Ascot, Kerry's Foundation supporting the Lighthouse Club handicap. Once again, the market is playing friendly with me. Via Serendipity for Charlie Fellows and Hayley Turner's fives, having been well-backed. Cliffs of Capri, Jimmy Osborne and Dougie Costello, 13-2. Mystery Smiles, 15-2. Bashir for Charlie Hills and Dane O'Neill is eights, with Documenting for Kevin Frost and Trevor Whelan being an 8-1 shot. Thoughts, sir?
I'm having a quick glance down the bet of myself to see if anything absolutely jumps out. Top Secret looks a reasonable price to me in this. He's about 14-16-1 chance.
Yep.
For a horse who's, of course, a distance winner.
Oh, it's gone. 8-1. Top Secret. Dang it. I did nothing, I promise you. So would that kill your interest?
Where are you seeing your prices?
I'm seeing my prices on one of the...
I'm still seeing 16-1 in two places. And 14 in another.
This could end
up... Are you looking at Andy, you're looking at the old... I did Andy Post prices again.
No, I'm looking at best prices. Hold on.
Who did you have down as favorite for this?
Via Serendipity.
Give me a good turn at the track last season, Via Serendipity.
But, yes.
But he's up 4 points for winning last time out. It's slightly surprised to see him as favorite, but I think he's handicapped to the. Pretty much handicapped to the hilt again after that Nara win last time, right?
Yeah, he's still favourite. And Top Secret is a top price of nines, but generally is actually shorter. 8s, 13-2, and 6s.
I'm seeing completely different prices to you here.
Take that, DeLargy! That's what... That's Odds Checker and Racing Post.
Well, on Odds Checker, Via Serendipity is 11-1 in a place.
What the? What are you doing? Have you refreshed the page?
It might be me looking at out-of-date Andy Post prices. Or a change. Right. Let's do this again. See if they've moved the race onto the day of race markets. It's a funny old market, isn't it? Right, Via Serendipity.
What's the top price, Rory?
5-1, Emmett.
There you go. Right, I wondered about Rip Orf.
Well, he'd been off the course for a long time before reappearing the other day at Sandown. And he was well beaten there, although you'd expect that anyway. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that would have been a risk to put him spot on for this. And he'd be a much more interest here than he was at Sandown. Johnny Pete, a very interesting jockey booking as well for David Ellsworth.
Yeah.
He's a 7-pound claimer who's impressed at times this season. Listen, he's back to his best. He goes close. But when you're a 7-year-old and you've been off the track for the best part of 2 years, you have to wonder what level of ability remains, because you'd expect most 7-year-old flat handicappers to be on the downgrade a little bit. So he needs to prove that he's got most of that old ability. Well, the handicappers immediately drop from £3 for finishing well behind it at Sandown. But, you know, in a race that wasn't run particularly fast, who's beaten 16 lengths. And I might be asking a bit of him to bounce back. Clearly, David Ellsworth will have had this race in mind, but it'll be a very, very good piece of training if he gets a rip off back to where he was. Documenting's pretty obvious here in that he won the race last season. And he would bounce back to form after a couple of bad runs this year. Won a close third to Motowadjid at Donny last time. That suggests that he's ready to go close again. And he's probably, again, given he's only had three turf runs all season, the chances are they've been kind of working back from this race. Trevor Whelan back on board again. It's been hugely unfancy. The first two starts at this track this season, he's gone off at 80 to 1 both times. That being the Buckingham Palace handicap and then the International Stakes. So there's, you know, two of the big 7-furlong handicaps run here all season. Very little chance on those, but he ran an awful lot better last time out. He wasn't entirely disgraced in the international race. He finished, you know, midfield there, but beaten 7.5 lengths. But I could see him doing better. I just thought Top Secret was the kind of horse who is guaranteed to run well. As I said, of course, a distance winner. He's £10 higher, but he was progressive last season, and after needing his first couple of runs this season, he's gone on really nicely since that. As I said, won here in July. I naturally nabbed him on his return at a price. And he's been runner-up both times since, only beaten a nose by Nini's Choice last time out, coming from a less than ideal position in the race that didn't really pan out to suit his tactics. But 7-furlong races at Alaska will always play to the strengths of horses like him with that sort of style of running, whether they go on well at the finish from midfield. Newbury sometimes pans out that way. It didn't last time. But he would have got up on another stride. And that was a decent race. The winner there, Nini's Choice, was an unexposed 3-year-old who'd won his previous start. There are plenty of solid enough performers behind. Slightly lesser race than this, I suppose. Only a 0-85 handicap. This is 0-100, isn't it? Or 0-100. Not 105. Either way, it's essentially not 100 because documenting is top weighted with the real 101. So Top Secret clearly needs to improve to be winning at this sort of level, but he's improved with his last three starts. I think he's liable to do so again. And Nicola Curry, as she's shown throughout the season, is certainly no negative on board. So he'd be the pick for me.
Big time. Okay. So Top Secret for Roy DeLargy. I'll give a honourable mention to Silver Samurai for Marco Body, having been talked off Rip Off, so we'll go there.
You're gonna rip off if you like, and just
I think you make a good point.
I have to David Ellsworth. You know, he's a horse I've liked an awful lot, Rip Off. But you know, he was a young horse when he's running so well in races here, and his record at Ascot is tremendous.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons I was interested in.
Almost always run well here, but it's just a question of, we don't know how much ability he retains to the 7-year-old. You have to say that statistically speaking, he's likely not to be quite the force of old. That might mean that he needs to drop in grade to get back on the winning thread. But David Ellsworth has been an absolute genius over the years. He's getting on in years now, but he still has all the ability. So I wouldn't put it past him to come up with another superb result.
Yeah.
But for me, I prefer to back a horse who's in form and progressing this season.
Yeah, no, I completely take your point. So it's Top Secret and Silver Samurai for the exacta with Tote. We'll move on to Haydock, where most eyes will be. The first race we're going to talk about is the 1 mile and 6-furlong Betfair Exchange Old Borough Handicap, where where the betting is headed by Global Storm, who's a top race fours. Noble Masquerade, fives. Rhythmic Intent, sevens and eights. Rudzinski, sevens. Autumn War, tens. And Indianapolis is a best price, 11 to 1. Rory, competitive handicap, 12 runners. This is almost like a feature of the weekend. 10 runners, 12 runners.
Yeah, well, look, we're losing horses and handicaps. Something that needs to be examined. I blame Kevin Blake myself. sure, why not? There's not enough of thinking has been done about how things like the Sunday series and particularly the racing league are going to affect Saturday televised handicaps. The racing league particularly has been set up as if somehow it's operating a different pool of horses, and it's not. If you're putting on big money handicaps that aren't on terrestrial TV and they've been run midweek, and the prize money is better than it is for most handicaps, and it's for horses in the not a 95 bracket, you are going to be taking horses away from these Saturday handicaps. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a no-brainer, and you know, however successful you deem a new venture like that to be, you've got to weigh that against what negative effect it has on the rest of the program. And what we're seeing at the moment is that these big Saturday handicaps, which used to be, you know, 16, 17, 18 runner fields, are being decimated. And I use the word decimated in roughly its correct context. Worse than decimated. More than 10% of horses being lost from these high-end handicaps. Obviously, there's always going to be enough horses for the lower grade races. And in a manner of speaking, you might as well make the racing league a, you know, open to not to 60 horses. Because if the concept is different, then it doesn't really matter what horses you've got running if it's for a new audience. But yeah, that's a bit of a bugbear. But it's something they can try to get sorted out for next season.
We're recording on Thursday, which is just ahead of the final night of the Racing League. How successful or lack thereof has it been in your eyes?
It's not been a complete disaster that some would paint it as. And the fact that people who don't want change don't like it is kind of a no-brainer, isn't it? Mm. It's very hard to sell team racing, you know, because racing is not fundamentally a team sport. It's possible to sort of regionalize it or to have some kind of team that makes sense. But the idea of a team, you know, that is the sponsor, especially when that sponsor doesn't even exist, yeah, that's very hard to get behind. Are you a Team Swish fan? I don't even know what that means. But, you know, if it was teams from different training centres, you know, a team from Epsom, a team from Lambourne, a team from Newmarket, a team from Midland, a team from Scotland, a team from Ireland, a team from Wales even. You know, and it'd be difficult to tie that up because you get different strengths within those areas. But the idea of having teams from training centres where people can identify with those centres makes some sense. Team colours is always going to be a strange one as well, because, you know, people recognise horses through, you know, people don't, if you took the tack off a horse and, you know, showed it in front of the public and said, who's this then? Most people wouldn't know a Group 1 winner based on, you know, here's this horse. It's not, there's no jockey on board, no trainer with it. It's not wearing its tack. It's just in a stable, and you've got to guess who it is. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Most trainers couldn't do it, quite frankly. So we recognize horses by, you know, knowing who trains them, knowing what horses run out yard end up looking like, who rides it, and the colors that it runs in. And when you take that away, you take away a little bit of the connection that people have with those horses. So some of the races, although they're good races, but you immediately lose a little bit of the tangible appeal of racing, because they all feel like strangers because they're running in funny colours. And by definition, the commentators are told to mention the teams at least as much as the horses, which gives you a very strange experience as well. Obviously, there's money coming in through it, and that's got to be a good thing. Any money that's new that's coming into racing is positive. But there is the potential for damaging the program as it stands. These essentially are extra races, and we don't have the horse population to support a bunch of extra races and still have the strength in the races that we know. So regular punters or those who watch TV racing only on terrestrial TV are tuning in on a Saturday, and they're getting poorer racing as a result. So, you know, there is a degree to which you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, and that might make Paul happy, but it's pissing Peter off. So there has to be a common ground. Whether the races in the series have to be worth the money they are in the first place, I don't know. I mean, what you need is for those races to fill and for the team concept to be robust. Again, there's the other element of betting on it. You've got the possibility of betting on leading jockey and leading stable and stuff like that there. But if they change the rules halfway through, then no one's going to want to bet in the competition where the rules change and the bets are potentially void. Because, you know, you'll have rules saying that each team has to have X number of horses and X number of jockeys, and that they will run, X number of horses will run in each race. If those things don't happen, then as a betting medium, that falls apart. Particularly when you're betting on a points-based system. So you have to have, obviously, as the Shergar Cup does, you have reserves so that the right number of horses run in the races. And these races weren't always filling. So you need to work out, you need to fill the races. You need to make sure the jockeys you have on board are riding. For me, I don't think it matters whether you get the top jockeys. I don't think it matters whether you get the top horses. I think it would work better if you had trainers who were really up for it, and if you were boosting the prize money for ordinary races so that you were guaranteed the jockeys that are listed for the teams running. You knew which horses were going to run, and all those races were always filling, and it wasn't having a detrimental effect on other races in the program. Given it's a Sky Sports thing, whether they have to be 90 rated horses, and obviously a lot of them haven't been. A lot of them have been rated a lot lower by definition, with the number of horses who are engaged in it. So horses with much lower handicap are actually able to get into the handicaps, which is good as far as I'm concerned. But I don't think they need to be worth, the races need to be worth fortunes. I think the prize money has to be good enough that people will want to run there rather than running somewhere else. But there are plenty of races where the horse population is greater than the options available. Yeah. You know, horses are getting balloted out of races. Those are races where you can put extras on. But where you know the horse, I mean, it's not difficult to do if you've got the numbers. You know what the ratings of horses are and what trips they're running over and who trains what. You can work out where you have an excess horse population, where you have a lack. And you need to work on those numbers. Do your research a long time in advance. Ask all the pertinent questions about what could go wrong and how you can fix it. And then go back and do that. You can't just do it as a big marketing exercise. And I think this is, the people behind it have probably got more flack than they deserve. There's a lot of work that has gone into it.
Agreed.
There's also lots of things that you couldn't possibly have envisaged beforehand that have cropped up, which will be learning experiences for next year. But we need to make sure that we're protecting the high class flat program and the heritage handicaps, and then they're not badly affected by a series which is meant to stand alone.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what changes are made for next season, or what is said about it once it wraps, because right now it looks as though Ireland are going to finish last. Ugh. God. I'm on TalkSport tomorrow, so I'm sure we'll be discussing it. And there's several different arguments that you can have, but I would largely agree with everything you've said. I think there's very little that can be disagreed with there. And it also, we've had several emails and messages to the Final Forum podcast asking, why are the handicaps so bad on weekends now? Why are there a lack of runners? Rory summed it up here. So, look, we'll see. We'll see how all of this develops. Anyway, the 255 at Haydock with the lesser number of horses than we would normally see. What are your thoughts?
This is the Aldborough Cup. I don't think there's an absolute standout in this race. I'd be, again, looking for a bit of value in the contest, which means that I probably should get updated prices, shouldn't I?
Do you want me to do that for you?
I've got them in front of me now. The horse that I quite like, who's, I think, has to be a big price because he keeps getting beat. 20 is his best price at the moment. I'd like to see slightly bigger than that. But oh no, I'll take that back. Not even the right leading horse. 12-1 is the best I can get about it. I was interested in Island Brave, although I probably want to get a bit bigger than 12s. Again, you're looking at reasonably significant overrides there. As I said, there's nothing lurking here particularly. Most of these are exposed handicappers. And I say the majority of them are, you know, above their ideal marks. So it's a case of you know, finding who's going to get everything dropping right for them on the day. I thought there was a chance that Island Brave would be overpriced. He's a 7-year-old. He's been around a fair bit. He's been running with credit all season in handicaps. He was out of his depth, really, in the Cigarro Stakes back in April. But he's run well in big handicaps since then. He was fourth in the Northumberland Plates. He was then ran a similar race, being a similar distance in the Shergar Cup Stairs in his next start. And most recently, he's run again to virtually identical level when a fairly close fifth of 14 behind Arcadian Sunrise at York's Ebor meeting last time out. What I have noticed is that his trainer, Heather Mayne, who apparently sings opera to her horses. That's her training regime. She doesn't gallop them, she just sings arias. she had a pretty poor start to the season, but the horses are beginning to run better now.
Yeah. She had a couple of winners recently.
She's obviously got, he's got it to do to a degree to turn the tables with Brzezinski and Hochfeld there. But I thought he was doing his best work later on. The slight concern with him is the drop back and trip. He stays 2 miles well, but he keeps running well. He's dropped a pound in the waist. Doesn't sound a huge amount, but essentially he's just been in the grip of the handicap of this season, off marks of around 100, and he's dropped to 98 now. As I said, he's not meeting well handicap horses as he did with the winner at York last time out, and I can see him running a decent race here as long as there's a decent gallop, because as I said, he's been running at 2 miles for the last while, and he does stay that trip well. So dropping back to an extended 1.6, it's extended by a massive yard. So unless they move the rails a little bit, the trip's slightly on the short side from, which is why I was hoping for a big price. But the one thing you will always get with Island Brave is that he runs his race almost all the time. And as I said, with nothing that appears to be ahead of its mark, I don't think he needs to run much above what he's been doing for his last 3 or 4 starts to get in the mix here. So at a double figure price, I think he's interesting. Rhythmic Intent's another one who ran well at York last time out. He's essentially the other way around. He's probably a mile and a half horse, really, with Rhythmic Intent. He does just about stay this trip. He's interesting enough. Indianapolis isn't running badly. he's just frustrating and hard to catch right.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the kind of horse who could easily hit the frame, but he's proven pretty hard to win with. Brudzinski, as I said, was ahead of Island Brave at York last time out. Although he is going all the way in the handicap, he's gone up 2 pounds for finishing second that day. So he's 3 pounds worse off with Island Brave. And I think Island Brave can potentially turn the tables on him. And the other one, I suppose, is worth looking at. The one improver in the field is Noble Masquerade, who's won 2 of his last 4 and has been second in the other 2. He's not gone up much in the weights. He seemed to take a fair step forward when winning at Windsor last time up by 4 lengths. And he did that. Windsor form can be a little bit misleading, but he did that at a good time. So a 6 pound rise for that looks fair. I just thought Noble Masquerade was liable to be pretty sure. I thought he'd be favourite for the race. He's sitting second favourite at the moment at 5-1. I'd make him favourite ahead of Global Storm. But again, I'm always looking for something at a bigger price. So if he ended up being a bigger price than that Noble Masquerade, he'd be very much on my short list. But as I said, I think Island Brave will drift a little bit from his current price.
Yeah, you'd like to think so. You'd like to think so. Noble Masquerade may very well.
Profile, but I'm saying 12-1 is a fair price. It doesn't get me incredibly excited, but it's a fair price and it's certainly one to consider.
Yeah, I can see a few of the wise guys putting up Noble Masquerade on the day, so he may not shorten, but Island Brave should. As long as the Final Furlong Podcast Army hold the line, hold Mad Tough. Now, take action. Saturday morning, that is. We're talking Group 1s with Roy Delargy next as we look ahead to the Sprint Cup at Haydock and the Prix de Moulin in Paris-Longchamp. First of all, Tote Plus provides the biggest and best pool betting payouts available to racing fans as Tote are on a mission to provide bettors with extra gravy and the best value possible. And Tote Plus does just that, as you are getting better value than ever before, as you can take advantage of some of the brilliant payouts that you get at the biggest meetings of the year, but also each and every single day racing, because Tote Plus is available in the UK and Ireland each day. Let's just say if you land the play spot, you're getting a 10% bump in your winnings. If you have a win bet, place bet, exacta, trifecta, if you do the scoop 6, 10% on top of your winnings courtesy of Tote. This is exclusive to tote.co.uk, tote.ie, or the official Tote app. Plenty of the Final Furlong Podcast Army are already taking advantage of this. You need to take advantage of it too. Tote.co.uk, tote.ie, or the official Tote app, and get your gravy with Tote Plus. That brings us to the feature race, where Starman is even money favorite for the Betfair Sprint Cup. Creative Force, Royal Ascot winner, all-round bit of a legend, really. Fives, Art Power is 17-2. Best price, that is, I should stress, because not many others are going that price. Glenn Shiel is 9s, Supremacy 14s, with our old friend, who did us a massive favor, Emradiana, 25s, and Summerhand, who we should give a mention to, as a 16-1 winner for the podcast last week, 33s. So Lee McKenzie and myself were high-fiving virtually afterwards. Right, Rory, your thoughts on the Betfair Sprint Cup?
They're very dull, I'm afraid. I think the favourite's a good thing.
The good to firm ground, I mean, just...
The ground's going to be... The question about this going into it was, the ground's always soft for the Sprint Cup. I'm not sure it's the ideal race for Starman. We're going to have probably the nicest weekend of the year this weekend, from what I can gather. And the ground looks like it's going to be rattling fast at both Haydock and Ascot, unless they turn the taps on. And I'm sure, I think Kirkland's the type to turn the taps on, do you?
Nope.
So I think Starman's got a massive chance. He was a tiny bit disappointing in the Maurice de Geest last time out. It started raining before the race. There were varying glowing descriptions that day, from very soft to good. It was probably just on the soft side of good, but that's probably soft enough for him. I think he wants it rattling fast. And he should get it rattling fast on Saturday. And I think he looked a different horse. He was hugely impressive in the July Cup. He didn't really look like he'd get there with a couple of furlongs to run, but he was incredibly strong at the finish in a very strong race and form that's worked out very well, as you'd expect of a July Cup.
Yeah.
There's no sense of him being flattered by how that race panned out at all. My one worry with him in a race like this would be in a big field, he might run into traffic, but it's not a particularly big field. And I think I suspect he's quite nicely drawn on the wing there. There shouldn't really be much of a draw bias, but it's certainly no hardship to be drawn wide or out. The pace will be up the middle, I would have thought, with Glenn Shield and Nando Parado. And Starman should get a lovely run through. He likes to be held up, but you know, inside him, Happy Romance tends to come from further back. Creative Force is a hold-up performer. Summerhand's not quite good enough. With he was a huge price last week, wasn't he, at 16s?
Oh yeah, he drifted all the way to 16s.
I'd put him up in the fields as expecting him to be a sort of 7 or 8 to 1 chance. I don't know why he drifted that. He was, you know, Philip at 20s and bigger on the machine beforehand, and given that he'd beaten the King Stand winner early in the season at Newmarket, that was remarkable value. But he's not really a Group 1 horse. And I don't think the race is really run to suit him in Newmarket. This will probably be run to suit him to a degree, but he's not quite, you know, he's a 7-year-old now. He's a very good horse, but essentially he was no match for Starman in the Duke of York early in the season. When he was race fit, he was coming off his career best effort. And he was beaten, 4.5 lengths by Starman that day.
Yeah.
No reason why he should be getting much closer this time around. And although it's a dull thing to say, and I tend to look for value, I'm really struggling here because horses I like, I was very keen on Emiratiana at York, because I think he's a better horse at 5 furlongs than he is at 6. But here he is back at 6 again. And I think, although I think he'd run well, I think, you know, what edge you had with him at a big price at York has kind of evaporated here, especially back up the trip. Art Parr, again, I really like, but I think he probably wants a stiff 5. He's better than the result, obviously, in the King George last time out, given what a mess that was. He ran very well on the wrong side of the track at Newmarket at the July Cup. And he would be my idea of a danger, but I don't think he wants it very fast either. You know, he's very effective on soft ground, Art Park. I think if it got very fast, that might be against him. Although, he has looked a better horse just being allowed to roll along. So I wouldn't rule him out of it. And of course, he's got whether it's a benefit or it goes against him, he's got pace alongside him as well. So I've got to mention him because he's a horse I've always had alongside. I think he'll do even better next year. I think he's I assume he's going to grow a little bit, and I think he might just be at his very best next season. But I'm a little concerned about the ground for him. Similar story for Glenn Shiel, who just hasn't been at his best this year, to be honest. The more I look at it, the harder it is to find one against Starman.
What about
either the 6.5 furlongs or the softish ground to find him out at Deauville? But dropping back and trip on a fast ground, he should be a much better horse.
What about Happy Romance for the Exacta? Like beating Diligent Harry and Tab Deed last time out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's a great angle for the Exacta, to be perfectly honest with you. But she keeps surprising. You think she's run to her best and she's reached her level, and then she pulls out a little bit more. She was well positioned when she won at Newbury last time, and that's 7 weeks ago. Feral break since then, and she struggled in Group 1 company when she's tried before that. So an improving filly this time of year, you want to keep them on side generally. But she was so good as a 2-year-old. I think the issue with her this season is no one really expected her to improve much from 2 to 3. And she has to win a list of race and a group three. So she's at least as good as ever. I do think she's slightly flattered by the win last time out. It was one of those races where, despite the small field, he ended up splitting into a couple of groups. And she's come from the back of the field, but I think she was very well suited by the way that race panned out. Not to call her lucky, but I don't think there's any obvious reason why she's going to win a group one race on the back of that. It'll be a great result because, you know, she's owned by the McMurray family, who have never had a horse before. She was the first they got, and she's won absolute fortunes for them. And every time she runs and wins, it's a new fairy story. So that's the kind of story you want on a day like this. But you got to bet with your heart, you got to bet with your head, not your heart.
I was going to say, what's happened to Rory?
Yeah. I can't really be with her. For all, you know, I'd be very happy to see her run a massive race.
Final selection, Starman?
Starman, I'm afraid. Yeah.
All right.
Short, but hard to beat.
Fair enough. The Prix de Moulin at Paddy Longchamp. So we are, technically speaking, still awaiting the final field for this, but it pretty much should be as is, you would like to think. The green light's been given to Snow Lantern, so she's going to go. Baid was given the green light during the week, and we already know that Poetic Flair is taking this engagement in instead of going to, as you rightly said, go to the Irish Champions weekend, where he'd have to run in a group two, which just doesn't make much sense. So keep him going by running in this race, which to me, Rory, looks a very, very winnable race for him.
Yeah, I have to say I'm a big, big fan of Baez. And this is one of those, it's going to split audiences. Baez is going to be favourite for it. My normal logic is stick with a horse with group one form and group one races. And Baez, he's too short for me to back. But I do think he is the real deal. Given that his career hadn't even started in May, he's rattled off 4 wins. He's been enormously impressive each time. I don't even think he had ideal conditions at Goodwood in his latest start.
No,
the one slight question is whether he would handle really soft ground, but he handled it that tacky good soft ground at Goodwood. Which a lot of jockeys felt was riding softer than the official. And he was very impressive there. Bottom line is that was the group three, and it's a big step up to a group one. So that's a question mark for him. And obviously Poetic there has better form in book. You keep running and winning in group ones, or at the very least finishing seconds, and you deserve maximum respect. And you look at the betting for this, but Baez a shade of odds on, and Poetic Flair something like 3 to 1, isn't he?
Yeah, it's.
I suppose the logical bet there is to back Poetic Flair, because we tend to want to crown our champions based on what we expect them to do in the future, rather than judging them on what they've done in the past and expect them to repeat it. So there's no doubt in the market. Is skewed in favour of Baez at this stage. So if you have to get involved by Poetic Flair, but as I said, I'll be sitting it out. I won't be betting on the race, and I'll be hoping for a huge performance from Baez because I think he's really good. But at the same time, we've seen horses, including from this yard and in these colours this season, who've looked absolute superstars at Group 3 level and then haven't gone on to win when stepped up to Group 1 company.
True.
So that's, it's always a question, winning easily against lesser horses is obviously easier to do than it is having to pull it out against the very best. So, on ratings, you'll often get the horses who's won at a lesser level coming out top on ratings because you've got to give them extra credit for the ease or the margin of victory. But that can be misleading at times. And historically, if you keep backing horses who win narrowly at Group 1 level, over horses who bolt up in Group 2 or Group 3 races, then you'll do better backing the proven Group 1 horses. So that's the logical way of approaching this race. As I said, I just have to be one of those people who thinks that Baez is liable to be very good, but I certainly wouldn't back him to prove it at that price. you know, if you've been watching racing all your life, sometimes you just want to see a superstar. You don't need to back them to prove that. You know, I like backing bad horses at 25-1, not superstars at 4-7. Because you should get enough enjoyment out of watching a great horse win a race. There's not an awful lot of value in just backing shorties in group races. You shouldn't lose an awful lot of money if you're backing form horses in group races. But similarly, you're going to be making a very small profit if you make a profit at all. And it is possible to watch a top-class race without a bet and actually enjoy it for what it is.
Exactly. And with the same firm, you've Bayeed at 8-11, Puttick Flair 3s, Snow Lantern 13-2, Order of Australia 10s.
We've not even mentioned Snow Lantern. And of course, you know, she's... we saw Alcohol Free upset Poetic Flair, and Snow Lantern is closely matched with her, and she's been improving all season. So I wouldn't entirely rule her out. Given her rate of progress, given how she wasn't experienced enough to be going for a Guineas earlier in the season. So you know, it's perfectly possible that she's the type to keep improving through the autumn. So she's not out of it at all.
Mm.
But it's going to be a race to save her. It should be a very, very good contest.
Yeah, should be a great contest. I think Puttick Flair wins, quite frankly. Who is the recommendation of the essential horse to include for the weekend, Rory?
It's one of those weekends where they're I'm not sure there is a real essential. I think. Top Secret is probably, although I'm not getting the price I thought I was getting him right now. I think sort of 8 or 9 to 1 about him is a very reasonable price in the big 7-foot on handicap at Ascot. But it's a slightly disappointing weekend in terms of trying to dig out horses at prices. Given what a good weekend this should be, it just sits a bit flat, doesn't it?
Yeah, there is. Certainly that to it, without question. I was going to go for Warhand, but no, I won't. I'll go for Poetic Flair. Although we could go for the patent. And there you go. You're sold! Patent is sold on those three horses. Rory Delargy, pleasure as always, my friend. We'll chat to you again next week.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you very much, Emmett.
We can read your content in the Irish Field, I should say, as well, by the way. And of course, sportinglife.com as well. But Rory, take care, and we will chat to you again very, very soon.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And thank you for listening. That is it. We're back on Monday. Have a great weekend. Take care. God bless.
The Final Furlong Podcast is proudly brought to you by Tote. Think you can't get better value? Think again. 10% bigger dividends when you bet direct with Tote Plus at tote.co.uk.